Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hi, 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 beautiful listeners. Okay, so you know how sometimes Cheryl and I on the podcast will be talking about a woman and we will say, oh, and she met this person so-and-so, and we really should talk about that person one of these days. Well, that's what happened with when we had Pam Wing here in studio. Love that interview. And Pam brought up a woman that we were curious about. And Cheryl, you're just a detective. You have to go after it.
I do. I love the research.
So you might remember that Pam told us that she was brought up in an atheistic home, not allowed to talk or mention Jesus or church. And then after Pam met the Lord, she found out that her grandmother was a Christian. This was her mom's mom, and that her grandmother had been praying for her. I love stories like this. And also, her grandmother's sister was a missionary to Africa, and that's who we wanted to discover more about today.
Her grandmother, Ruth, had been a missionary, her grandmother's sister, Ruth, had been a missionary. Had married a man named Guy Laird, and they had gone to Africa. She had had a little boy named Lawrence, and then she died.
Okay. Yes, I do remember.
So
we just touched on that.
Right. So we're going to talk about Guy Laird's second wife.
Oh,
and
there we
know,
go.
Okay. In that interview, our focus was more, you know, Ruth and Guy Laird, and then Margaret was just kind of like, oh, yes. She was the second wife. Oh, my goodness. So there's a book.
Yes, I love it. You brought it today. And I'm so glad, because these books are rare and hard to find. This one is called They Called Me Mama.
Okay. And not only
that,
this is what's amazing about that book. It was loaned to me by Pam, and I lost it for like a year. And Pam has been asking for it back. So now I can give it back to her because I actually found it.
Sorry, but first, Pam, we have to just talk about it, because this story takes us back to Africa, where some of our other women have spent many years. And I have a feeling we're going to feel like, okay, I remember that part of Africa, or those touch points are all there.
Right. Well, she was born Margaret Nicole, and she was born, get this, in Denver, Colorado, in July 31st, 1897. She was a first-generation American. So her father was born in Ireland, and he was a very strict Episcopalian. So obviously he would probably come from Northern Ireland, right? The English part of Ireland. And her mother was from Finland and was a very devout Lutheran. So her mother had come to Colorado, met Mr. Nicol, and they had gotten married. But as soon as they got married, a sharp contention arose between them as to what denomination they would belong to and what church their children would go. So they finally settled on, you know, it couldn't be the Lutheran and it couldn't be the Episcopalian. So they settled on being Presbyterians.
If I had to guess, that's what I guess. It's right in the middle.
Yes, right in the middle. But with all that, Margaret was taken to church regularly. She had 10 siblings, believe it or not.
Wow.
But she never knew Jesus Christ. Just considered it just stories and, you know, just something they did, a tradition. But never, ever had a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Her father died when she was a teenager, and actually her father did not come to true faith in Jesus until right before he died. But he died while Margaret was still a teenager, and Margaret felt this huge responsibility to help her mother. This is kind of a common theme, isn't it?
Yep.
To help her mother in Colorado with all the other siblings that she had. So she went to college and she became, and I think this is extraordinary considering it's Denver, Colorado, considering this is the, you know, just the turn of the century, early, this is probably 1915, 1916. It's when people used to graduate from high school at, you know, 15 years old.
Right. Which makes me also think of Titanic and the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Right.
And her roots to Colorado.
All of that going
era.
On.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so at this time, she becomes a dental radiologist. Who knows? Maybe she even gave x-rays to the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Interesting. Sure.
So This was her job. And just think about how new dentistry was, too.
All
of these new innovations and the fact that you actually had a radiologist, that they had that technology to take x-rays and see, you know, what was going on with teeth. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And she would use her salary to help support her mother and her siblings. Well, she was still going to school at this time, going to college, and there was a certain teacher, Miss Jessie Robbins, that she absolutely loved. There was just something about this teacher. She was enthralling when she taught. You could tell she was caring. And Margaret just couldn't get enough of her. This mm-hmm. was just her favorite teacher. She wanted to know her better. And she found out that Miss Robbins did a Bible teaching class on Sundays at a church. And Margaret determined that she was going to go and hear her teach the Bible, even though it meant that Margaret had to get up 90 minutes earlier on Sundays than she did any other way, day of the week, and make her way all the way across Denver to hear and sit in and be part of Miss Jessie Robbins' Bible college class, Sunday school class. Sorry. I was just thinking about like the draw of this woman.
Yeah.
Just by her example, just by her demeanor in teaching public school, that this one student says, whatever she's got, I want it. And I want to hear more.
And who does that remind you of? Henrietta Mears, who was a high school teacher and then started this Bible study at her home, and all the teenagers just wanted to come and learn about the Bible. And again, this repeating theme of the influence of Sunday school teachers and teachers. And we should never look down on those positions at all, because the eternal value they can have in a young life, it's immeasurable.
It really, really is. So she felt that the time that it took her to get to this Bible study, even every Sunday morning, she'd have to get up an hour and a half earlier just to make it across town, was so worth it to hear the enthralling words of Miss Jessie Robbins. So Jessie led many of her students to the Lord. Margaret wasn't the only one who came from that class, kind of like you were saying about Henrietta Mears. There were quite a few. But Margaret, as yet, had not given her life to the Lord, but she was watching and she was loving it. And one Christmas, she lingered after all the other students had left. It was Christmas time. And she'd made a special present for Miss Robbins. And she was waiting to give it to her when she handed it to Miss Robbins. Miss Robbins asked her if she knew the real reason that Christmas was celebrated. Now, get this. Margaret didn't.
Oh.
Doesn't that seem like unbelievable?
Yeah.
Like she didn't have a clue as to what
she
the
just knew the
real
traditions
reason.
And the ritual of church being part of that. Wow.
Exactly. So at that point, Jessie took the opportunity to share the gospel with Margaret and why Christmas is so important, because this is when God incarnate came to earth, became a baby, lived the life we should have lived from birth all the way to the cross, suffered for our sins, died on a cross, paying the penalty for our sins, having lived the perfect life, then rose again from the dead, you know, ascended to heaven, sent the Holy Spirit, started the church, and all of this was so exciting and so novel to Margaret that she gave her life to the Lord right then.
Wow.
Just prayed. And then after that, she kept going to the Sunday school class. I don't know if you had this when you were growing up, because I grew up in church, and I grew up first in the Four Square Church and then Calvary Chapel. But when my dad first came to Calvary Chapel, we first had Sunday school in the morning for adults, and there was a Sunday school class for children.
Yep.
And then we had the regular service right after that, where he did a sermon, and we had kids' church. So we didn't go to the individual Sunday school classes were first, and then we had this assembly of all the kids together.
Yes. Or it was a big deal if you got to go to big church.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, I was at big church every Sunday night and every Wednesday night. In fact, so much so that my mom brought a sleeping bag so I could fall asleep. Because sometimes those prayer meetings lasted pretty long, but they were exciting. But that was what was happening. It was the Sunday school class that was the precursor to the Sunday service. And so Margaret decided she wanted to stay for the Sunday service. After all, she had received the Lord. She wanted to know all that she could. And so she started going to church. So she would go cross town, sit through the Sunday school class that Jesse Robbins taught. Then she would stay for church. And one day, this older woman came up to her and said, "Now, you're the one Jesse is always talking about, or Miss Robbins is always talking about." Margaret said, I don't think so. And she said, yes. "You're the one that she's praying for to go on the mission field. And she's praying for you to go because she couldn't. And that was always a desire of her heart. But she has lesions on her lungs, and so she can't go. So she's been praying for you to go. Are you so excited?"
Oh, wow.
Well, Margaret knew nothing about that.
Yes.
And it scared her. Mm. And it made her feel almost exploited, like she wasn't befriending me for me. She was befriending me to send me in her place to the mission field.
Yes.
She was almost resentful.
Yeah.
And so she decided that was it. She wasn't going to go to church anymore. She just, that's it.
Wow.
I've tried it. I'm not doing this anymore. And so she was trying to stay away from church. But then she heard all this talk about this messianic Jewish man who would be speaking at churches all over Colorado. So she decided she wanted to go hear him when he was in Denver. And she went and she heard his testimony. And this man, his name was Joseph Flack, had been a very, very wealthy, very, very successful Jewish man, very high up in the Jewish circles. And then Jesus revealed himself to Joseph. And when Jesus revealed himself to Joseph, and Joseph shared it with his family, his wife left him. He lost all his social status because it was in the Jewish community. And not only that, he lost most of his money because, you know, the Jews that he knew that supported him stopped. They boycotted him and he lost everything for Jesus Christ. But he didn't mind because serving Jesus was so worth it. And so he would go place to place and share his testimony. But while he was sharing, she was so enthralled that she decided to go the following week because he was in Denver at a different church, the Second Congregational Church. And she went there to hear him speak. And she lingered again afterward. But something that he said really touched her. And he had mentioned that he had gone to Moody Bible School after he got saved.
Mm-hmm.
And she went up to him and she looked at him, and all of a sudden she blurted out, "I'm going to Moody Bible College." And he said, "You are? That's wonderful." And he said, "When did you decide and when are you going?" And she said, "I don't know. I don't know anything about Moody, but when you were talking about Moody and the second time I heard you, I decided that I was supposed to go there. I felt the stirring in my heart that I'm supposed to go there." And he said, "Okay, well, have you told your family and your mother yet?" And she said, "Oh, no. I can't tell my mother. In fact, I can't go for quite a long time because, you know, I've got these siblings and she needs my support." And he said, "No, you need to tell your mother." Well, she went to hear him again. And he found her in the crowd. And afterwards, he approached her. He said, "Have you told your mother yet?" And she said, "No, I haven't told my mother. I can't tell my mother." And he said, "You know what? I'm going to go with you to your house and I'm going to tell your mother for you." So he accompanied her home and he introduced himself. And, you know, Margaret gave a little bit of his backstory. And as they were talking to Mrs. Nicole, Mr. Flack said, "I want you to know that God is calling your daughter Margaret to the mission field, and she's supposed to go to Moody Bible College. This is of the Lord." And her mother, Mrs. Nicole, looked at Margaret, looked at Joseph Flack, and said, "Well, praise the Lord."
Really?
And it was so unexpected. And then she looked at Margaret. She said, "Margaret, when I came from Finland, I came with the desire to train to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. That was what I wanted to do, but I met your father. And then I thought we would maybe do it together, and I found out he didn't have the same faith in God that I did. And then you came and your siblings came, but I never forgot that desire that I had to serve the Lord. And I pray that someday one of my children would serve the Lord. And this is the answer to my prayers." So Margaret signed up for Moody Bible Institute. And she didn't have any money, but Joseph Flack paid for her first semester to go. And then after that, the Lord provided for every semester by different means. She went in 1916. She graduated in 1919. She came back to Colorado. But while she was there, she heard a missionary speak who was from Central Africa Republic. And she just knew that was where she was supposed to go. And one of the ways she knew is that she'd taken high school French and she'd taken French in college. She just loved the French language. And when she found out that that was the language that was spoken, she knew that was where the Lord was calling her. So she decided, that's where I'm going. I'm going to go to Central Africa Republic. So she found out that what the need was in Central Africa Republic, more than anything else, and this was governed by the French at that time, the need was for nurses. So she already had that radiologist training, and now she's got her Bible training. So she went back to Colorado, enrolled in Colorado Women's College, and studied nursing. And she graduated and was all ready to go to Africa. And all these different missionary societies, different churches said, oh, we'll support you. You know, you can go as our missionary. But she felt no peace. She felt absolutely no peace. And she had been reading about Hudson Taylor, had learned about Hudson Taylor at Moody. And she loved the way he just looked to the Lord for his support. And she said, you know, I really don't want to be under a governing agency. I really want to go with the support of the Lord. Well, right then, at the Baptist Church, they were starting a missionary society, and it was called Mid-Missionary Baptist Society, and they didn't even have a missionary yet. They just started this. Margaret was like one of their first missionaries, and one of the things they said is, we can't support you, but we would really love to, you know, pray for you and call you our missionary. She said, that's no problem at all, because that's how I feel like the Lord is calling me to go. Well, a family called the Hoovers heard about what she was doing. They were in her church in Colorado, and they knew her, and they'd been watching her. And they felt like they were a wealthy family, that God was calling them to support Margaret as their own special missionary. So they underwrote her for years, and they were part of the sending of Margaret to Africa. So she talked about going to Africa, and she went in 1923. So she's about 25 or 26 years old. She set sail from first of all, before she could even go to Africa, she had to go to France. And she went to Paris, and they wanted her to study language, to really get the French language down, because she was going to a predominantly French-speaking area of Africa. So she was honing her French there, and then the missionary society sent her a telegram that she was supposed to, at that time, leave for Africa. Now, in 1923, this is after her year of training in France. It's after becoming a nurse and her medical studies. It's after going to Moody. It's after already being a dental radiologist. She's finally on her way to Africa. And it began with a journey of 28 days.
Okay, wait. How old is she at this point?
26.
Okay, that was. And the time in Paris was at a language school or just being in the culture so she could pick up?
You know what? Margaret wrote this and she did not give as many details as I would like.
Yeah, yeah, because it was just part of her journey.
Mm-hmm. She said she spent a year in France. What that was, I don't know. But apparently, from what you read in the book, her French was superb. Mm. I mean, she spoke it like, in fact, the French who were governing Central African Republic, they said she's three quarters French.
Interesting.
Because of how excellent her French was.
Came to her. So what is Central Republic Africa today?
It's
have to look that up.
Well, it's Central Africa. So I think that would be like Zaire and, you know, different.
Yeah.
So different.
Changed since she was there. And
absolutely.
There are now different names to the country.
Mm-hmm.
That specific area hadn't been, because I was thinking of Dr. Livingston that we talked about and Margaret yes. Livingston. But that was south of that mm-hmm. area. But kind of that heart of Africa
exactly.
had not had a lot of inroads. So for her to be so willing and so clearly called to go had to be the Lord's direction. There's no doubt about it.
And one of the things that happened is that the French really wanted her there because yeah. of her French, and they wanted her as a missionary, which was almost unheard of because it was dominated by, you know, France, by the Catholic mm-hmm. Church mm-hmm. that had been antagonistic to Protestants and to Protestant missionaries. But because of her medical training, they were desperate for her. So it took her 28 days, as I said, sailing to Africa. And she landed and she had two more days of travel to the Bangui region and then a 14-day trek to Central Africa. And she arrived in Sabut, where she had to begin to study Sango. And Sango was the native language of Central Africa Republic. And most of the French did not speak Sango.
Mm.
And so she had to learn this new African dialect. And she had been studying there for only 4 months. And she was at a language school there, mm-hmm. I know, when she was sent to Bangasso. And she was sent by the French. So it was the French putting pressure on the Baptists to send Margaret to this area to open a French-speaking school.
Ah, for the education and the medical. There's such mm-hmm. the opportunity for the missionary work. Mm-hmm.
Now, the French said, we want you to go. But mm-hmm. they didn't offer her any support. Oh. They didn't offer her any school, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It was just go and start a school. You're responsible for starting it. You're responsible for getting your students. You're responsible for finding the place. You're responsible for all of that. But we want you to go there right now. And so she had to go. So she rode her bike. She had a bicycle.
No.
Yes. And she was this bicycle was her number one means of transportation. But it was 12 days riding her bike to get there while porters carried five of her luggage lockers on their heads to Bangasso. By the time she reached Bangasso, she was absolutely 100% exhausted.
Oh, really?
You can imagine. mm-hmm. Because, you know, she's sleeping out in the jungle.
All of it.
With, you know, and she's
all of it.
She's riding a bicycle 12 days, every day, just getting on her bicycle and, you know, riding 20 to 40 miles a day. So the missionaries, there were some missionaries there, they offered her some rest because the next day she would be meeting the French officials who were asking for the school. So she's ridden her bike there. She's got to meet these French officials. And one of them that she has to meet is she has to meet the Sultan, who is the governing power. He's one of the Bangosa people, and he's the governing power. So she's mm-hmm. got to make an impression mm-hmm. on this guy, and she's got to make an impression on these French. Like, look how well I speak French. This is my vision. Mm. I've got this medical training. So all of that's going to happen, and she is exhaustedly tired. Now,
yes.
I'm going to leave it on that cliffhanger because we've gotten Margaret saved. We've gotten Margaret.
Give her a nap. Let yes. her rest a bit, please.
We've got Margaret trained for the mission field.
Oh.
We've got her all the way to France, and now we've got her to Africa, and now we've even got her to Bangasso. And in Bangasso, so much is going to happen to Margaret. It's so worth stopping here because I don't want to rush any of the next part because so much happens in Bangasso. And so
what I really see here is the tenacity, which we see in many of the women we talk about, the undaunted spirit to
right.
just follow the Lord in spite of all obstacles and lack of support. And I think there's something there for all of us in our culture where things can be fairly easy, or we want affirmation, or we want security of, well, I know that I've raised enough funds to be able to do this and feel secure. But that walk of faith is being demonstrated to us in another woman worth knowing.
You know, it's so funny because my comment on the side is, what a woman of faith. Yeah. And you'll find that even more as we go forward next week with part two of the testimony of Margaret Laird. It's so worth it.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.